Wonderful. All right. I would like to introduce a special guest who's sharing with us this morning. This is Mark. Mark, why don't you go on and come on up here? Mark Tyndall leads the Vineyard Church in just outside of Philadelphia in Media. And then it was Mark's son, Jared, who's currently on our staff, who was leading worship today. So we get like this father-son duo thing going on here. Nice. That's pretty exciting. So Mark, welcome to the Vineyard in Duluth. Would you guys just welcome him for me? Thank you.
Well, good morning, everybody. Good morning. Thank you so much. That's going to work way better that way. Yeah, my name is Mark. I'm from Philadelphia. I'm super grateful to the Duluth Vineyard for the love that you've given to Vanessa, our beautiful daughter-in-law, and our son, Jared, who's also sort of beautiful. I mean, you guys have been so good to him. Michael's been great to him. It's just an honor to be here. And I want to just take a minute as I start off today to say something that maybe only somebody from the outside can say. Duluth Vineyard has got such a great reputation in the whole Vineyard movement, and it's because you guys share your best stuff with the rest of us. And I'm so grateful for that. It's not something that every church does, this idea of having a bigger vision like that that campaign that you're working on right now, that Communities of Hope thing. That's the heart of Vineyard, and thank you so much for sharing. Michael's a high-quality guy. Brenda just gives so much great leadership to your region here. But honestly, you guys both have a great church, but you help other churches pursue what God has for them. And I'm just so super grateful. In fact, I'm filled with gratitude today, actually. I'm filled with gratitude today because not only do you share with us in the church world, but also in the NFL. Seriously, the Vikings have done so much for the Eagles recently, really allowing us to go ahead and win that game right when you were 5-0, and then we won. And since then, I think you haven't really won a whole lot, and I appreciate that. And taking Sam Bradford off our hands, oh my gosh, thank you so much. This is amazing. You know that kind of frustration you're having right now? We were doomed to have that. He was going to be our starting quarterback this year. And thank you so much. And the more you lose, the higher our draft pick goes up. So when it comes around to the draft, you could be thinking about me and, you know, praying for me, whatever you do when you think of enemies. How about we take a look at scripture together? I really am all serious about my gratitude for this church, my love of this church. It's a great place to be. Today, I want to start in Mark 1. I want to talk to you about God's mission and how we can take a look at our participation in God's mission. What's God up to, and how do we see ourselves clear to be a part of that? This is how Jesus did it. Mark 1:29. As soon as they left the synagogue, they went with James and John to the home of Simon and Andrew. And Simon's mother-in-law was in bed with a fever, and they immediately told Jesus about her. So he went to her, and he took her hand, and he helped her up. And the fever left her, and she began to wait on them. That evening, after sunset, the people brought to Jesus all the sick and the demon-possessed. And we would say in the Vineyard, the demonized might be a better word for that. The whole town gathered at the door, and Jesus healed many who were at various diseases. He also drove out many demons, but he wouldn't let the demons speak because they knew who he was. Very early in the morning, while it was still dark, Jesus got up, he left the house, and he went off to a solitary place where he prayed. Simon and his companions went to look for him, and when they found him, they exclaimed, "Everyone is looking for you." And Jesus replied, "Let us go somewhere else to the nearby villages so I can preach there also, because that is why I have come." I want to just lead you in prayer. Today's sermon is called Periscope, Understanding the Mission of Your Life. And I want to really just look to God right now. Would you pray with me? Jesus, who loves every single person in this room, flood this place with your love. Flood this place with grace. I pray for no shame here. I pray just for the people who are loved, hearing from their King. I pray that I'd be a part of it. I ask you, Lord, to give me words here. Give me that thing which is more than words, the Spirit of God resting on a sermon, helping people grow and thrive in a kingdom unseen so many times. Lord, help us put our periscopes up today. In Jesus' name, amen. Well, you may be able, if you're kind of a word person, the kind of person who loves words, you might be able to think of what the word periscope means. It's the word for around and the word for look, okay, to look around. To take a periscope, you reach up out of the water or from behind a wall and you look all around. This is a diagram. It's not actually a full picture of a periscope. I mean, good grief, the guy only has half a head there. So you get the idea, though. Right? This idea of looking up from where it's dark, from where it's murky, from where it's busy, from where it's cluttered, from where you got a million things to do, you got soccer practice to do, you got bills to pay, you've got things on your mind, you've got the way things used to be. It's kind of crazy, really, ever getting a clear look at what God has for you. Do you ever feel like, man, wouldn't it be great if there was some way I could just reach up and think, God, what's your vision of my life? How am I supposed to be kind of in tune with you? How am I supposed to play my part? What do you have for me? I'm cloudy. I'm dark. I'm obscured here. I need some help from you, God. And so we've got this view here of the guy looking up with the periscope. But what if you got the periscope wrong, right? What if the periscope faced back and all you ever did was look at the past, what people have said about you? Labels have been put on you, failures that you had, that time that you tried to do the big thing for God and it didn't go so well. Man, a periscope wouldn't work so well if it was always looking to the past. And of course, a periscope wouldn't do so well if it was just looking at yourself, right? Do you? So this know some people that have this kind of look at the world that's mostly about me, right? You know some humans, right? Some humans mostly think, how's my life going? How's things for me? My whole vision for my life is, what is this like for me? That would be a terrible periscope if that's what the periscope did. And then, of course, don't you know some people whose periscope sort of is face on, like, what do others think of me? Right? I'm kind of thinking about that right now. What are you all thinking about me? Okay? And don't tell me, because I need some freedom here. I want to look at God's mission for me here. But do you ever know some people there that just think, do you ever feel like that? Like you mostly are thinking like, well, what are people going to think about me? That's a terrible way to have a mission. Of course, Jesus seems so good at getting his view up. What does God want? How do I stay in line with my Father? He seems great at that. He's got this periscopic vision. He's got a perspective that seems unaffected by the people around him. In John 13, there's an interesting passage. It says, Jesus, knowing that he'd come from the Father and that he was returning to the Father, took off his robe, he got down and washed the disciples' feet. Now, this is the night that he is betrayed. This is the night that he's going to, you know, be arrested. He's going to be beaten. He's going to be spat upon. He's going to be mocked. And in the middle of this incredible tension, and with lots of foresight, I mean, he'd been saying for months going into this, they're going to come, they're going to get me, they're going to arrest me, they're going to flog me, they're going to mock me, they're going to kill me. In the middle of knowing that, Jesus is like, I come from the Father. I'm here now. I'm going to return to the Father. I call this the U-shaped life. Jesus had a U-shaped life. I've come from the Father. I'm here now. I'm returning to the Father. And he's able to wash the disciples' feet in the middle of a lot of bickering, a lot of pettiness, and some betrayal and all this. Jesus has an idea who he is, what he's doing in the moment. This is sort of, I think, a model for how to be human. Jesus not only shows us what it's like to be God, he shows us what it's like to be a human being. So let me just talk about Jesus' periscopic vision, okay? Things that he said along the way that indicated that he wasn't just here, that he came for a reason. By the way, this is a Christmas message. You know that when Jesus came, he came to do something. He came for a reason. He didn't just like show up, let's see how it goes. No, he came for a reason. Let me just show you a couple of these. I came to serve, Jesus said. The Son of Man didn't come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. That's an interesting perspective, right? He came to give himself away. I love this. By the way, knowing the mission of God will not necessarily make your life easier. It'll make your life clearer, okay? The idea is not like, hey, you know, six steps to an easier life. I'm talking to you about how to live the life that you are designed to live. The thing that God has for you. Jesus knows that the mission that he's on, the vision he has for his life, will in the end cost him his life. And isn't this such a contrast to the leaders of our day? The leaders that say, look, this is going to be kind of great for people like me and for me myself. Our vision of leadership is really weird sometimes. And we start to think like, this will be great. I'll be in power and things can go my way. It's not Jesus' perspective at all. His idea of being a great leader is to be a great servant. And he's kind of surrounded by this kind of a malaise of human experience and human kind of tendencies, this push towards greatness. There's a mom in the story, James and John's mom is an interesting mom. I think of her kind of like one of these Little League moms. I don't know if you have Little League up here. I don't know if there is a Little League of grouse hunting, okay? But where I'm from, we've got moms and dads that lean in the fence and they tell the coach exactly how to do their job, right? Tell the umps what the umps got wrong. And they're taking it way too seriously. And they think their kid should be at the very center. And they're like, put my kid at pitcher. Put my kid at shortstop. I want my kid to do well. Why aren't they batting third? Why aren't they batting fourth? Why aren't they at the center? Look, coach, when you're hoisting the trophy, I want my kid on your right and my kid on your left. I want my boys to be there when the whole pile is happening on the mound, when the celebration's happening, when the confetti is raining down. Please make sure that everybody knows it's James, it's John who are great. And this mom comes to Jesus and says, Jesus, when your kingdom comes in, I want my boys to be at your right and your left. And honestly, no shame, I get that, I get that. It's just not the way Jesus looks at the situation. She says, or he says to her, you know, you don't actually know what you're asking. I've come to serve and not to be served. I've come to give my life as a ransom for many. He's so aware. And this real proud mom, this ambitious mom, she's so glad. She's so proud of her boys. You know, it's pretty cool to sit here in an auditorium like this and see my boy lead in worship. I understand the feeling. It's a great feeling, but Jesus got a whole different idea about what power is for. And by the way, wouldn't it be good when we have elections to think that the people who are running for office are still got that old mindset of being a public servant? We've got the language for this stuff. We just don't see it modeled too well. Jesus, in the middle of all of this, reaches up. He goes, nope. I'm here to serve. I'm here to serve. What else can we say about Jesus? He's here to help people find home. I love this about Jesus. He's just got this idea that everybody belongs at the family table. Everybody belongs with the Father. The Father's for everyone. By the way, if you feel sort of far away from God today, you are in the heart of God, and Jesus is looking for you. He's looking for you. There's this story where Jesus is in a parade. It's actually kind of like one of those sports parades, championship parades. And Jesus is in this parade. The confetti's raining down. The people are coming out of their homes, their shops. They're crowding around the street. And they want to see him. They're hailing him. They think, this is the guy. This guy's going to break off the oppression of Rome from us. He's going to be our king. He's going to do great things. They're yelling to him. And then there's this little guy. Maybe you've heard of this guy, Zacchaeus, a little guy in town. And he's been a traitor to the whole town. Basically a tax collector, is a guy who sells out all his relatives, all his friends, his neighbors, so he can work for the Romans, get a little rich off the deal. It's very clear at the end, when Zacchaeus gets his act together, it's very clear that he has been not only betraying the people close to him, but he's also been profiting off of it. He's kind of a jerk. He's just a little jerk. And he's interested in seeing this guy Jesus too. He can't get near. He climbs up in a tree. He climbs up in a tree. And I just love that Jesus, in the middle of the parade, all these people heralding, all these people yelling how great he is and hailing him as a king. In the middle of the parade, Jesus looks up in a tree and he says, you, dude, I want to have lunch with you. In the middle of this whole thing, he's looking for Zacchaeus. He finds Zacchaeus. You know, a little story in our family. My son Jared, who was up there playing, it was in those days. You remember the days when cell phones used to be mostly phones, right? Like, my cell phone is everything for me. I don't know what would happen if just so there's some kind of cell phone rapture or something. We went back to old, you know, wired telephones. Would we be able to exist? I doubt it, right? But back in the day, there were cell phones, and they were only phones. And Jared was a new driver, just a 17-year-old or so, and he went on a pretty far trip, a couple hours away from us. And it was pushing out the boundaries kind of experience for him. And I got this call. Dad, I'm lost. I said, all right, calm down. Here we go. What street are you on? Dad, I don't know. I said, just tell me some things you see. What are some of the buildings around? What do you see? Some signs, anything like that? Anything with letters? Anything to get me on the map here, boy? Where are you? He goes, Dad, all I see is trees, right? Tell me about the trees, boy. Come on, what do you got here? What species of trees are they? Is it, and we just kind of played, and it was just the weirdest feeling. Any of you parents in the room, did you ever lose your kid? Okay, now I'm serious, he was a driving kid, but I didn't know how to help him. My whole heart was like, I will come to you. Describe the tree to me, boy. Come on, I will find it. If there's a tree out there that needs to be identified, I will find it and I will bring you home. That's the heart of God. The heart of God for you. You might think like, oh, you don't understand what happened to me when I was a kid. You don't understand what happened this once I was in this church. I had a bad religious experience. I had an uncle that was a blah, blah, blah. No, I don't understand everything. All I know is this. If somehow life has put you up a tree, if somehow you're the problem, you're the traitor, you're the one that got yourself up a tree, Jesus is looking for you. Jesus has his scope up all the time and all the confetti raining down, all the spotlights on him, and he's thinking, how can I find that guy? I'm looking for my guy today, and today he's looking for you. He is on your case. He's totally for you. There is an amber alert out for the people who are missing from the house of God, the table of God, and Jesus is looking for you. I love the perspective of Jesus. He says, I came to give life. The thief comes to steal and kill and destroy. I've come that they may have life and have it to the full. I love this about Jesus. I love that he's always looking. He knows what the enemy's like. Basically, Jesus' perspective of the devil is this. Anything he's offering to you, it's to rip you off. It's to vandalize your life. It's to destroy you. It's to kill you. It's to bloody you, leave you behind. And Jesus says, I'm the good shepherd, and I lay down my life. I think of him like, how King Midas is everything he touches turns to gold? I think of Jesus like this. Everything he touches turns to life. Wherever it's dead, wherever it's deaf, wherever it's blind, wherever demons have encroached, wherever there's been this kind of invasion of death, Jesus turns it to life. That happened in my life. It probably happened in a lot of your lives here. A lot of people around here would say, yeah, that's exactly what Jesus did for me. He turned everything into life. It's just so beautiful. I just love that Jesus has this idea. Look, I know that I'm in the middle of a contest here for people. I know there's an enemy. It's trying to rip them off. It's trying to steal from them, trying to leave them a bloody mess. And I got to find them and touch them. I got to get them. Life. I love that Jesus walks through life with this perspective. Jesus has this idea that he's opening eyes and he's unveiling pretense. In the middle of such an intense situation, remember the scene with Pilate? Pilate accuses him of being the Son of God, and Jesus goes, this is true. The guy's going to basically kill him. And Jesus tells him the truth. In this particular situation, in John 9, there's a great thing where Jesus does what Jesus often does. He does what he says. He says what he does. It's sometimes before, sometimes after. He heals a guy who can't see. This guy's blind, and he heals him. And then there's like a little argument about how Jesus did the job and why the guy was blind in the first place. And Jesus is like, are you kidding me? How many blind guys have you ever seen healed? Right? Here's the deal. I've come into this world to open eyes. And he says, if you will say you can see and not acknowledge that this is something extraordinary, something like heaven breaking into the world, you're blind. When Jesus opens eyes, he's doing something else. He is closing eyes that will not see. When Jesus comes into the world, he tells the truth in such a strong way that people are set free, that eyes are open, but at the same time, the proud get locked into their state. Don't be confused. Not everyone will be saved. You need Jesus? Good. You got him. You don't need Jesus. You got a big, big problem. He said, like, who? I don't got no problem. No blindness here. Jesus has a way of shining light in a way that if you deny it, you're blinded forever. It's brutal. It's like so brilliant. It's like the sun. It gives light, but it also blinds. Look, Jesus is so aware of who he is that he tells the truth even when it costs him his life. And then lastly, there's this idea that Jesus shares incredible news. The story that we were looking at earlier, he says, let's go somewhere else to the nearby villages so I can preach there also. That is why I've come. This is a Christmas message, right? Jesus didn't show up here. He didn't stumble into earth. He didn't accidentally come, or while I'm here, I might as well do this. Jesus came for a reason. Do you ever like walk into a room and forget what you're doing there? Right? You're like, okay, good. Because I was gonna, all right, I'm going back. You know, like, that's not Jesus. Jesus, super clear. I came to open eyes. I came to find the lost. I came to serve. I'm a servant here. What if everybody in this room just walked into Duluth tomorrow with this one thought, this one periscopic idea? I'm here to serve. Here I am, Duluth. I am your servant today. Right? Here I am, Duluth, looking for somebody up a tree. Somebody is missing. Here I am, just to tell the truth. Here I am. I'm here to announce good news. Jesus had this best news, this kind of incredible news, this better than good news. It was a news that he was a king of a kingdom, and in this kingdom, everything gets made new. It's an incredible kingdom. It's a fantastic kingdom. He lives out this story like, what I'm doing is I'm going to take everything here that's been touched with death, that's been touched with old, that's been touched with sin, it's been touched with sickness, it's been touched by the demons. I'm going to get it, grab it, pull the rug out from under it. Everything's going to be new, and I'll be the king of that kingdom, and all will be well, and you can be a part of it. He lives with this story. Now, the interesting thing to me is that it was sometimes hard for people to tell exactly what that meant. Jesus has got this ability to steal away and find out the signals for the day, like a team huddling up, right? Before the play, there's a huddle, and Jesus, early in the morning, while it was still dark, which I think in Duluth is sort of like 8 o'clock, I'm not positive about that, you know, early in the morning, Jesus steals away. He talks to the Father. Listen, this has got to be something like our practice. You've got to find that time when there's no crowd, when there's no noise, when the phone's not ringing, when your attention's not drawn seven different ways to say, I'm going to reach up to get the mission. Now, here's the interesting thing about this particular thing, sort of the least dramatic of all of them, except for the fact that he's a preacher, right? And it's working, and crowds are coming. There's like crowds at the door, and he gets this idea. Everybody's looking for me. It's time for me to go to another town. That's why I've come. It's time for me to go somewhere else, to nearby villages, so I can preach here. That is why I've come. It's one of the things I love about the Duluth Vineyard. You've got this idea that we are not at the center of the story. Jesus could have just easily been like preacher heaven, like, wow, there's power, there's people coming, you know? We can kind of build a great building here, you know, there'll be a cafe in the lobby. No, he's like, let's go somewhere else. What a cool thing that a church you planted 1 year ago is now up to 300 people, and people are coming to the Lord, people are getting baptized and everything. You have this vision like Jesus. I just admire it so much. Thank you so much for being like that. So many churches are mostly about themselves. Don't you love that in the middle of all this, Jesus, with incredible good news, thinks, you know what? We're not the center of the story here. Or my success is not even the center of the story. This news is for other towns too. And so he does it. Now, I want to just go into a little like subcategory of my talk, because something I've noticed is that not everybody who misses the mission is way off. Oh, there's something called shadow mission. John Ortberg is my favorite preacher. He's just a good preacher out in the Silicon Valley, out in in California. And Ortberg did a series this summer. You can find it online, Overcoming Your Shadow Mission. It's also a little book if you want to get that little book. It just sums up much better than what I'm going to say. But let me just bring this concept in. Because I think one of the very good things you could do as an outcome of this sermon is sit down, get some friends, say, what is my mission? What are the people who know you the best? What do you think the mission is in my life? Spend some time praying about it. But then also, as a way to kind of come to grips with this, think, what is my shadow mission? What is this other mission that's sort of like my mission, but different than my mission? This is what Ortberg says. Mission is the highest purpose to which God calls us. A shadow mission is an authentic mission that's been derailed. Well, that's an interesting little thing. Here's another thing he says. Without authentic mission, we're tempted to drift into autopilot, letting our lives center around something that is unworthy, something selfish, something dark. It's a temptation of every human being to get slightly off, whether it's way off or slightly off. I think for most of us, it's a little bit slightly off. I'm going to talk about some extreme examples here. But I think for most of us, our shadow mission looks something like our actual mission. And it's hard to critique for other people except for those who know us the best and those with whom we're transparent. That's why small groups are so great. If you can get in a small group where you can tell the truth about yourself and be safe and really say it, and they can talk back to you, they can call out what's best in you and challenge you when they're like, hey, Mark, is that actually what God has for you? Or is that some kind of weird version of it? Now, I want to just tell you a little bit about shadow mission. Shadow mission, Ortberg goes through the Bible, and he talks about a number of people. I'll just say about Adam and Eve. He says, Adam and Eve have the greatest mission that's ever been given to anybody, right? Here's your mission. We're going to put you in paradise. You're going to name all the animals. You're going to practice authority and doing things, putting order to this whole deal. This is going to be your thing. You're going to have actual place and leadership here. You know, hippopotamus, you know, pterodactyl. Yeah, after a while, they're like cat, you know. cat, bug, you know. And it just gets more and more gentle because, like, who can name all day, right, you know? But here's the mission. It's like, you're in paradise, eat anything you want, you know, be naked, be fruitful, multiply. That sounds good, right? Right? You know about this in Minnesota, right? Be naked, be fruitful, multiply is good. Mostly that's good. Eat anything you want. Stay away from this one tree because, like, I'm God. And I just want the authority to, you know, shape your life. I want you to respect me as God. There's something about this tree that won't be good for you. And their shadow mission is, you know what? We want to be like God. He can't tell us what to eat. Right? Isn't that weird? It's like the best mission ever. And they can't avoid their shadow mission. How about King Herod? This is Christmas time. King Herod. King Herod has the honor to be the king when Messiah comes in. Not only that, he's the king of the country to which Messiah comes. It could have been like this. King Herod announces the greatest news for the world in all of history and been the first politician that wasn't exaggerating. Jesus is born. Let me introduce to you Messiah. Instead, he says, kill every boy under 2 years old. His shadow mission, his soul can't tolerate somebody else being greater than him, and he calls for the infanticide of all the little boys in the land. How dark, how twisted is the human soul? How often do we miss the way? Ortberg brings up, Jesus had a shadow mission. He didn't go for it, but all the time Satan was in his ear. And Ortberg says, I think Jesus' shadow mission was to be the Messiah without suffering. You think of the enemy coming, Satan coming to Jesus in the temptation, right as his ministry is about to start. And you say, why don't you just jump off this tower? It will be great. Everybody will know you're great. You'll just jump off this tower and the angels will sort of, you know, guide you on down. You're going to stick the landing. Everybody's going to say, there's the Messiah. That's fantastic. Constantly, the enemy's in Jesus here. Do you really have to be crucified in order to carry this thing out? Remember what happened when Peter talked to Jesus, said, no, you're not going to the cross. Jesus said, get behind me, Satan. Jesus recognizes shadow mission. If you don't recognize your shadow mission, it will eat you up. And for many of us, our shadow missions will look something like the real mission, and you won't even be able to discern it. You'll be able to fake everybody out. Of course, Ortberg builds a whole series on Esther, this queen, this beautiful Jewish queen. So you may know the story of the book of Esther. It's a really short read, too. You can read that yourself later if you want. It's in the Old Testament. It's called Esther, which is going to be easy for remembering. And so the story is this. There's a king. He's got a great wife. He wants his wife to come in all beautied up to be kind of impressive to his drunk friends. She refuses to do that. And in an act of bold, you know, kind of self understanding, she's like, I'm not for that. And then she's no longer his wife. And so there's like a contest. The king calls for a contest. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to put out word all around, all the world, get every beautiful young girl to parade in front of me. They're going to look. I'm going to look and see that back in those days, women were valued mostly for how they looked. It's good that we've gotten past this, that we no longer bring a bunch of women from around the world to parade in bathing suits in front of us to judge them and then pick one as the winner. I'm so glad that we've moved past that. But that's exactly how Esther got to be the queen. This young, beautiful Jewish girl got to be the queen, but she found out that there was a guy in the king's royal circle. They hated the Jews. Anti-Semitism has gone way back, goes way back. And he hated the Jews. He was going to wipe out the Jews. And Esther had an uncle. And the uncle says this, look, I know you're beautiful. I know you're powerful. I know you got the king's ear. I know you got all the servants you could ever want. I know you got all the wealth you could ever want. But maybe that's not what you're for. Maybe, Esther, you're actually for something different than that. Maybe, Esther, you are made for such a time as this. Maybe you're supposed to save the Jews. And this is his threefold kind of challenge to Esther. Esther, if you don't save the Jews, you're going to get wiped out with the Jews. You're Jewish yourself. You're not going to be spared in the slaughter. Esther, if you don't save the Jews, somebody else will, because God's got a purpose and it'll get accomplished. And by the way, Duluth Vineyard, if you don't do the assignment that's on Duluth Vineyard, God will raise up somebody else to do it. God's not going to be foiled by our disobedience. If you don't do the thing that's assigned to you as a person, God will raise up somebody to do it. You just want to have the honor of participating with God. Esther, if you don't do this, somebody else will do it. And then he says, Esther, what if God made you beautiful and God put you in the position and you won the contest just so that in your day, in your generation, you could save the Jews? Now, what are you doing with your day and your generation and the things that God has given you? And what is your shadow mission? I think you need to be really paying attention to this. What is that thing that could take you off? I know my shadow mission. My shadow mission is kind of weird. It's to be like I am, sort of, but to have a sort of a smaller, handcrafted, perfected version of myself and my church, to be a part of a small, self-validating, like-minded community with me at the center, the kind pastor at the very center, loved by everybody, and all of this cloaked from almost anybody being able to see through, because I'm called to something else. I'm called to put healthy Vineyard churches all around the Philadelphia region within my lifetime. And I'm working on that with everybody I can. But the pull to me is pull back, craft, perfect, be small, be liked, be warm to everybody, but be inauthentic and disobedient to the actual mission that's on my life. Now, as I close the sermon, I want to give you another picture, another way to think about this. I want to call you to full obedience to God, but I want to talk a little bit about what full obedience looks like and what's the nature of it. I've got this thing that I have that I think sometimes God might have too. I've got this thing where if I'm in church, I got a swell church. You got to visit sometime if you're in the Philadelphia area. Come on by, it's great. But here's what happens. I'll talk to somebody in the church. I'll say, could you step into my office? And all of a sudden you see them turn into like a seventh grader and I turn into the principal. And they're like, because why? Because what? Because I didn't do that. Did you hear about that thing on Wednesday? Because it was her fault. You know, I'm like, oh, no. I just wanted to talk to you, and I'm a little bit deaf, and the lobby's sort of loud. Seriously, this happens all the time, and I wonder if that ever happens to God, where God just says to you, hey, could you just step into my office for a minute? I just want to, you're like, oh, no, 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 he's going to ask me to go to Africa. Wait, by the way, I've only known one person in my life who's ever been asked by God to go to Africa, actually, and this guy loves it. He's having the time of his life. It's a hoot. He's a great, an awesome guy, okay, and he's kind of getting rich as he does it, okay? Another story. So if God asks you to obey tonight, today, if God says, look, I want you to steal away. I want you to both steal away and seek me about your mission. Put that periscope up. And I want you to be in a community where there's people like Mordecai who can speak to you about your mission and tell you when you're on, tell you when you're off. What do you think he's going to do? Well, let me tell you the parable of the three dogs. The parable of the three dogs is interesting. I had a guy, the first time I ever mentioned this, who was in our church, and he had a giant Bible. And he said, Mark, when you put the parable of the three dogs up there, I felt bad because I didn't know the parable of the three dogs. And I thought I knew everything in the Bible. He's one of these big Bible guys, these suitcase Bibles. You know the kind of Bibles that are so big they need wheels, right? You got some people in your church like that. They love the Bible. It's all highlighted. He's like, I didn't know the parable of the three dogs. I well, that's because I wrote the parable of the three dogs. Two of the dogs were mine. This is the first dog. This is my dog, Obi. We had an Obi for some 13 years or 14 years, something. He's an awesome dog. Looked like a lion. He was huge, 130 pounds, hairy. Everywhere he went, it was all over. I'm like a neat freak, almost a germaphobe kind of guy. And Obi just left evidence of Obi all over the place. Obi was kind. Obi's the smartest dog I ever knew. He's the best counselor I ever knew. I've seen counselor. I paid him $100 an hour. They were nowhere as good as talking to Obi. Obi, let me just tell you what happened today. Okay? Obi would look at me and I'd be like, yeah, exactly. Okay? Really awesome, awesome. He was just a good friend. We all cried when he died. He was just, oh my gosh. I love this dog with all my heart. He was fantastic. And he was so good with kids. He would lay there. My little neighbor Ellie would come over when she was like 2 years old. And Obi's just this huge lion dog. And she would just lay across, sideways across his back like this. And Obi would look up like, hey. How you doing? Super gentle with any child. Parents would bring him up, come up to the porch. Because the thing that Obi was great at, and I take full credit for this, is laying on the porch without a leash. He would lay there on the porch and people would drive by and honk at Obi, whether we were in the house or outside the house. Obi would stay there. And this is my major skill in life is I teach dogs how to stay on the porch without a leash. I also have taught my kids how to stay on the porch without a leash, but that was pretty easy, and I don't feel that proud about that. But the dogs, it's kind of hard, right? A dog sees dogs walking by. We live right in a town with sidewalks and everything. Dog will lay right there, and the dog will right by. And the owners of the dogs would give me that look like, what kind of man are you that you have power over your dog? I'd be like, I know, right? You know? And fantastic, the dog would just lay there, and they say, can we bring our little kid up? Will he eat our child? No, he won't eat your child, you know. And Obi's just fantastic. Now, the rule was, Obi, you can't get off the porch. But every once in a while, I'd come outside the house, and I'd find Obi, like, on the side. And he'd broken the rule, and I'd ask him about it. Obi, what are you doing here on the side? And Obi would look up to me and just say, like, I don't know. I don't know. I just was on the porch, and then I think my feet brought me over here, and I'm just, you're right. You're right. I know the rule. I'm here. Okay, now, not all dogs are like that. Now, we have a different dog right now. This is my dog, Lucy. Lucy's fast. Lucy's blurry. You can't really find a picture of Lucy that doesn't have a blur. She's about half the size of Obi. She does not shed. Thank you, Jesus. I love that. Lucy's friendly. I like her better than Obi, if all truth be told. I love this dog. She likes the French kiss. That's nice. And I'm just so into this dog. She's not as smart as Obi. She's not as good of a counselor as Obi. She's sweet as pie. She's got to be, you know, gentle with children as well. She's only a year and a half old right now, so she's still learning. And I've trained her to stay on the porch without a leash. But she's not as good as it And you know, Barb is training. This is my wife, Barb, over here. And she's trained her to stay on the leash with the porch. So we got this thing where we're not even training her in tandem. I've got this thing, and Barb's got another thing. And Barb thinks that I'm wrong, and she thinks that Lucy's too young for this. And because Lucy does want to get off. And all truth be told, she wants to get off. And if I don't pay attention, she does get off. And sometimes we'll be having an argument about that, and Lucy will be right there, and a dog will be coming along, because that's the big test, right? A dog coming along the sidewalk, and Lucy's, and you can see the hair on the back of her neck kind of rise up, like, "Ooh, this is getting interesting. I could sniff that," you know. And you know, and Barb will say something like this. She'll say, like, "She's gonna go. You got to get her. She's gonna. I told you not to do this." I'll say, "She's all right. She'll be fine." And Lucy looks up and goes, "No, she's right." Boom! And she goes. Lucy doesn't get off the porch by accident. Lucy's a rebel. She's an escapee. She's an escape convict. You know, she wants to get off that porch. She has not learned what Obi learned. All right. But now I want to tell you about a third dog. This is Cammy. Cammy was not my dog. Cammy is a dog I met in Portland, Oregon. My friend Jeff and Kelly had Cammy, and Cammy was real good at staying in their yard. In Portland, they let them go out on the yard, apparently, and she was good because they had one of those electric fences that if the dog goes over, it electrocutes the dog. You know that dog, the fence? And they went through like 7 dogs before they got one that really understood the rules, and so Cammy would stay in the yard. And it was kind of a limited life, right? Like, yes, I'm being obedient, because if I'm not obedient, I'm going to get electric shock. And so, you know, it's a kind of obedience, right? It's okay. But Cammy had one special treat in her life. And Jeff said, "You know, I know this is kind of weird, this fence thing here, but there is another thing." And he goes over to his truck and he says, "Mark, watch this." And he hits the bed of his truck like, bop, bop. And Cammy's like, "No way." Cammy's like, "Boom, boom, boom, up into the truck. It's going to be good. It's going to be good. You're going to be." And he drives right over the fence. "Oh, Jeff, you're going to electrocute your dog." He goes, "No, Mark. The tires ground her, and she doesn't feel an electric shock when she's with me. When she's with me, it gets really good. And she probably knows where we're going, because we're going to the dog park where they do all the dog things." And she's really excited. And in the back, Cammy's like, "Oh, yeah, I'm excited. Oh, yeah, this is so great. Me and Jeff, we're going to do the me and Jeff thing. We're going to go out." And she goes out with Jeff. And Jeff, they get there. And Jeff's wife, Kelly's with us. And Kelly's like laying down some rules, because Kelly thinks that she's trained Jeff, but she hasn't really. And so Jeff picks up a stick. He throws a stick. Watch this one. Cammy's like, "No way, the stick game." And Ron's gets a stick. "Come bring back Jeff. No, stick game, stick game, stick game." And Kelly says, "There's this one thing. Don't get her muddy today. Would you not get her muddy?" And Jeff makes a kind of non-committal grunt, right? Like men do when they don't want to be like tied down. And so he throws the stick into the mud, right in the next moment, right into the mud. Cammy's like, "I like the mud." Gets the thing. Cammy's getting a little muddy like this, like she is in the picture there. And then here's the deal. We get to this ravine, and it's, I don't know, it's like 30 yards down the ravine. It's a pretty deep ravine. Like a person couldn't walk down this without sort of stumbling or tipping over. But the dog's kind of into it, and Jeff says, "Watch this." And he throws it down. At the bottom of the ravine is a creek. And Kelly's like, "No, Jeff." And Jeff's like, "Go, Cammy," you know, because he's not trained at all. And Cammy goes down, she gets the stick, and she's like, "Wah," you know, she shakes it off, and she's totally muddy now. And gets the stick, brings it up, does it a couple times. And then one time, it's so cool, he throws the stick down, he goes into the creek, and Cammy is like looking around and can't find the stick. And Jeff goes, "Okay, Mark, this is where it gets good." He goes, Cammy. And he points. Cammy's like, "Er?" And she looks over where he's pointing, sees the stick, and gets it. I think, "Oh my gosh, this is amazing." So here I go. I'm calling you into the office. God's calling you into the office. He's telling you this. He said, "Look, I got a mission for your life. I got a mission for your life." And here's the deal. I think there's like sort of 3 kinds of people in this world. There's the wanderers. You know, they're not really oriented around mission. I don't know how I got over here. I'm just like, I'm over here now. I'm just, like, imagine if I just sort of finished the sermon like this. I just kind of go in the back and just stand here for a while. Like, don't you know people like that? It's like their whole life is like, I would pay the bills and, you know, feed the kids, or pay the kids and feed the bills. I don't know. What you, and then there's people who go like this. I don't care what you think, God. I'm out of here. I'm out of here. The hair on the back of your neck goes, boom, I'm out of here. I don't care. Listen, you can only God me so much, I'm out of here. But then I think there's a sweet spot. There's another thing. There's the Cammy-like way of being where you do what you're created to do and God does what he has dreamed of doing with you forever. Live in paradise. Eat everything you want. Keep me as God. It's a great plan. I'm going to give you lots of authority, lots to do in this world. But you're meant to be with him. You're meant to go over the fences of life with him and not get shocked, but to have the time of your life. You are meant for mission, people. You are meant for mission. And to say yes will be the greatest decision you ever make. Why don't you stand up? We're going to pray together. I want to pray for you. I know that most of us don't come here with this mindset like, I don't care what God thinks. That's not why you go to church, right? But there's a part of us that's all a little bit like Lucy. And there's certainly a bunch of us that are a lot like Obi, that's sort of wandering around, kind of not focused. It's hard to get the periscope up in this world. Let's pray. So now we apply faith to this teaching. That in the worst of situations, God has a purpose for all of us. In any kind of situation, God wants to say something and guide us. He wants to clap his hands. Here you go. He's looking up a tree. Say, come on down to the tree. Why are you hiding from me? Why are you up there? Let's have lunch together. And so many people around the room right now want to say something like this. We want to go with you. Do you want to do that? Just let your heart say yes. I want to be like Cammy. I want to go with God. I trust you. I trust you. God says it's not always going to be easy, but always be good. Come on, let's do that thing that you are made to do and the thing that's been in my heart since the beginning of time. Let's work together to express the new kingdom to this world. Now, Father, I just ask for my friends here. You would double their impact. You'd double their focus. You'd clarify their vision. And you would help them know what is that shadow mission that pulls them to the side. We pray for Mike and Brendan, the staff here, Lord, that you'd lead them so well. God, make this church double and triple what it's been to impact this world, even going forward. We ask in Jesus' name, amen. I'm going to invite the prayer ministry team to come on up. I think there's some people here who are trained to pray. And I'd love to just invite you up. If you've got some need for prayer, you're like, yeah, okay, I believe all this, but I don't know what I'm for. I don't know. It's been a long time since I've tried to get a clear look, or maybe you say something like, I've been looking and looking, and I can't discern what actually the mission is in my life. These people would love to pray for you. If you've got some physical need, we'd love to pray for your healing. We believe God heals. The kingdom comes with words and with power, and we'd love to pray for you. If you've got any physical need at all, we'll delight in seeing what God does with our prayers. We're going to worship right now, and we'd love to meet you up here in prayer.